Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Under the Radar SFF Books Podcast. I'm your host, Blaze, as always. Thank you so much for joining me and listening wherever you may be around the world. And today, I have a very special interview. I am interviewing sci-fi author John Hemry, a.k.a. Jack Campbell, author of the Lost Fleet series, one which I recently started. I'm two books in, and it has captured my heart and my imagination. So, John, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me on.
So I did some research on you, and you are indeed a retired Navy officer. First, I wanted to thank you so much for your service and keeping us safe and protecting our country. When you were a Navy officer, what influence did you have in that line of work and bringing to your science fiction work? What inspired you to want to become an author, and how did your previous occupation help in that?
Well, I'd wanted to be a writer from before I joined the Navy, but basically I didn't have enough experience in life at that point. So the Navy gave me quite a bit in that respect. In terms of life experience, of course, I learned how to drive ships, which relative motion, everything helps a lot when you're figuring out space battles. Understanding how a military works, how the different specialties talk and think and everything. Part of that was encounters with a lot of people in different countries, different nationalities, how the cultural differences impact how people see things and do things. And I did have more than one assignment where I was had to do quite a bit of writing or editing. So I learned how to write and to edit in an official sense. So all those things contributed a lot to me being able to write halfway well once I got out.
Awesome. And I actually, the first two books, I actually listened to the audiobooks, and the narrator you have is just fantastic. And I remember the intro that you gave for book two titled Fearless, that when you were writing this, you had to kind of reimagine a little bit how a spacecraft would move and navigate as compared to like a naval ship or even like an aircraft. I found that so fascinating to listen to. Could you tell the audience how you came up with the navigation for the spaceships and how you had to come up with the different methods as compared to airship or navy ship?
Yeah, I always try to write my stuff if it is real, as if it's really happening, as if this is actual equipment thing. So I thought about the environment they were operating in, space, which is unimaginably huge in human terms. So you've got ships that have to travel very quickly, and that creates a set of limitations and requirements. But it's also an unconstrained three-dimensional world where you don't have an ocean surface or a height in the atmosphere where you can't go past. You can just go on forever in any direction. And there's no way to hide. So you're pretty much, if you're out there, they can see you. But because of the distances, the information you get can be minutes, hours, even days, time late. So I put all those things together and worked out what would a ship operating a warship in space be like, given the technologies I was proposing. And the result is something that there's a lot of ship to it. There's a bit of aircraft to it, but basically they're also unique in their own ways. So I had to think of any engagements in new terms, in terms of what these craft were like and the way they would fight. So all those things went into it, but mainly it all grew from the desire to approach it as if this is really happening, how would this stuff actually work? Because once you establish that, it makes you write better because you can't just make things up or fudge things to get through situations. You have to actually think about how people are going to handle this situation, how they're going to get out of this mess. I think that's important in terms of keeping the reader happy, because when writers skip things over or just keep things fuzzy so they can avoid dealing with hard issues, I think readers can usually spot that pretty easily.
Yes, and that's probably some of the most riveting parts of the book, is seeing how the captain, we'll talk about him in a bit, Blackjack Geary, how he's in his mind coming up with the battle plan and just relaying it to his to the captains of his ship. That was probably the more engaging parts of the story. And that was great to listen to and actually read. So you said you always wanted to become a writer. Who were some of the authors who you grew to love over the years and maybe someone who influenced you in wanting to become a writer?
Oh, gosh, there were so many. I read a great deal before I became a writer. One of the ironies of becoming a writer is you become a writer because you love to read, but then once you start writing, you don't have that much time to read. I read a lot of names that are classics or should be remembered as classics. People like Robert Heinlein and Andre Norton, Lee Brackett. She's just brilliant. C.J. Cherry, Poole Anderson, Gordon Dixon. I could go on for a long time. I learned something from all of them. And even today, if I read somebody like Poole Anderson, I'll think, gosh, I'm never going to be able to write as good as this guy did.
Well, I certainly think you do. I've read C.J. Cherry, and I think you're just on par with her. It's hard for science fiction for me because it's kind of like both ends of the spectrum. Either I'm so invested that I just want to binge the rest of the series, or it just doesn't grab me. And usually it has to do with quote unquote hardcore science, like terminology with ships. Mm. And there is some in your series, but the way you portray it in the story and the action and the fast pace, it just captures me. So I'm always looking for other series kind of in the same vein as yours. Do you have any suggestions for authors before we dive into your work?
Oh, gosh, that's hard. as you notice, I do things differently. So I don't know if I could recommend anything that's just like mine. In terms of good storytelling, modern stuff, you've got people like Michael Mamet. He wrote Planetside. Elizabeth Moon writes some good stuff, although that tends to be the fantasy stuff now. Modern, like I told you, I haven't been able to read that many people. There are many others, but my mind went blank.
No worries at all. Thank you so much for your recommendations. And with that, why don't we jump into your series? Titled the Lost Fleet series, how would you describe this to someone brand new to your work or even brand new to science fiction in general of what your series is about and what themes you wanted to get across before we talk about the main characters and the plot?
Well, the series was created out of two different concepts. One of them was the idea of a long retreat in space. Could you actually do that in a way that was plausible, that made sense? I spent years wondering about that. The other idea was the sleeping hero legend, which is very common, and it's found in every culture on Earth. The idea of this great hero from the past who isn't dead, they're just sleeping, and when they're really needed, they'll appear. And that was in the back of my head for a long time. And then I finally realized I could combine them both and they work perfectly. So it's the story of these two spacefaring cultures who have been at war for a century. And because they have these vast resources, they've been able to keep it going, but the strain's really telling on them. And one side, the Alliance, the good guys, find this damaged escape pod that has in it frozen in survival sleep this great hero from the past, from the first battle of the war 100 years ago. His name's John Geary, known as Blackjack. And they've been brought up to believe he's the greatest hero ever, the most amazing person, best officer ever. He, of course, knows he's not that. He knows he's just a regular guy. And yet, they're all counting on him because the fleet has made this desperate attack. They're trapped deep in enemy territory. They're about to be destroyed, and they need Blackjack to save them. So he has to try to be this person greater than he is enough to save the people who believe in him. And also while dealing, of course, with the pressure of knowing that everyone he wants to know is dead now. So he's alone in a future that's dealing with the impact of 100 years of war. And that was one of the concepts I wanted to address, you know, the idea that long wars are not good for societies or militaries. You tend to pick up a lot of bad lessons along the way. So he's confronted with these differences in the way his people think now, 100 years in the future. And he has to address that somehow. So it's deals with lessons of leadership, responsibility, command, and the moral questions that somebody in Geary's position has to address in the course of trying to save his own people and win a war that so far has been unwinnable. But maybe he can do something about that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And John Geary is such an interesting character, also known as Blackjack. Everyone around him, or I should say, not everyone, most people around him are in awe of him, the legend like brought back to life to save the Alliance fleet. But in his own mind, he knows that a lot of the legends are just untrue. So he's definitely a stranger in a strange land trying to pick up the pieces. I was wondering, John Geary, influenced by anyone in real life or a person or maybe some events that came to mind, or was he just completely made up in your mind?
He's definitely a composite, partly of some of the best commanders I've served under. People like Captain Hayes and Admiral Cathal Flynn. He's partly drawn from them and partly drawn from historical figures I admire. One of the biggest being George Washington. Because the thing about Blackjack, of course, is he's got this immense authority beyond what he should have to... he could say he's all power for himself. He could do anything he wants to do and get away with it. And he has to confront that temptation because it would certainly make his path easier in the short term. But he has to deal with that, which, of course, was the same sort of thing that George Washington dealt with, rejecting the idea of him becoming a king. So he's definitely a composite. My image of what a really good officer would do, a really good person would do when faced with that kind of situation, those kinds of challenges and temptations.
Now, right from page one of the first book, The Lost Fleet, Dauntless, Geary is faced with a really like back against the wall situation. His fleet is almost on the brink of being destroyed. The enemy are about to like attack him, and he has to find a way to get out of there. Also, the fleet, the reason they're being hunted is they hold kind of like a gate key to the Syndic's gates,
their jump
portals, hypernet speed, their jump portals where they can go to other parts of the universe. And in that first scene, Geary is actually confronted, not an exact descendant of him, but a relative of him. That just culture shock just hits him right in the face. So I can only imagine the amount of, you know, like depression and psychological warfare going on in his mind while he's trying to combat all of these outside forces. I don't know how he would be able to hold it together. I know I wouldn't. What was the inspiration for like the hypernet gates and a ship, kind of this whole fleet being lost and kind of like on the run and with the enemy chasing them? How'd you come up with the hypernet gates?
Well, as I said, I was trying to do a long retreat in space. So I figured to make that plausible, I needed two ways of getting around interstellar travel. And so one method is the old-fashioned jump drives, which you can only basically go from star to star jumping. And that's been around for a long time. And at this point, it's become just something you use when you have no other choice. And then you have the much newer hypernet, which didn't exist when Geary went into his survival sleep. And that's much faster, but you actually have to build a gate in the star system to be able to use this thing, which are really expensive. And there's other complications, which you will find as you get further into the series. The inspiration was I needed a way to make it plausible that the enemy would keep trying to catch them, and yet they would have a way to avoid that, the enemy catching them. So this idea that you've got the best star systems, you know, in terms of population and economies and everything, they've got the hypernet gates. Then you've got these other systems that are kind of withering on the vine because they're not on the freeway bypass them. when the freeway was built. So they're just trying to hang on. And the fleet, the Alliance fleet, using the jump points to try to evade the numerically superior Syndicate forces long enough to get home, which is a quite a long journey. So they use the key that they managed to acquire to the Syndic Hypernet to get deep into Syndicate space, but then they're trapped there. And the only way out is to try to slowly jump back through all those stars, which seems impossible, but that's their only option. So Geary's going to give it his best shot.
Yeah, and with Geary leading the way, people think that it would be to his disadvantage that he's been away for over 100 years, that there's new technology, there's new ways of warfare that he's just not familiar with. But actually, you write in the story that some of the old, like, forgotten techniques and tactics, those are working to his advantage because the enemy doesn't anticipate it. So it's like the old dog is teaching the new guys old tricks that they once lost forgotten. And it just works beautifully with the narrative. That was just something very, very well done. Can we talk about your audiobook narrator? He does a fantastic job just relaying the message, the tone of the series, and just keeps you entertained the whole way. How did you find him? And can you talk a little bit about the process of finding the guy for your audiobooks?
Well, that's that was basically pure chance. I was very lucky. When the audiobooks were done, at that time I didn't have much real clout. They just assigned somebody to the books. And that turned out to be Christian Rummel. And he is, as you say, a great narrator for the series. He does a fantastic job. So he's still narrating the series quite a few books later. So I was told this is the guy, and we communicated emails and sending some sound files. Like, he would ask how a certain name was pronounced, and what accent somebody might have, whether there were accents to deal with, particular places, how to pronounce them, things like that. We discussed basically the mechanics of reading the books, so that he could then put his interpretation on how to read them out loud. And he's very good at it, and I freely admit I was very lucky to get him for that.
Yeah, and everyone is going to enjoy whoever listens to the audiobooks. I'm definitely going to listen to the rest of the series with him. You mentioned the many other books in the series. So correct me if I'm wrong, but The Lost Fleet has 6 books, and then there's a sequel series titled Beyond the Frontier. And after finishing book 2, I think I got a little hint on what that's about, but we won't get into that. That's spoiler territory. And then there's a spinoff series, and then there's a prequel series. Could you talk a little bit about the spinoff and the prequel series? And then maybe for someone new, would you suggest reading in publication order, or could they start with the spinoff or the prequel series just fine?
Well, originally, of course, I was just planning on doing the 6 books in the Lost Fleet series, but then they end with a nice ending, you know. But of course, it's a big universe, so not everything's wrapped up. But when I finished the 6th book, there was demand from publishers and readers for more. So, you know, it's not exactly a moral dilemma. Let's see if I can come up with the stories. But I was concerned with keeping the stories fresh, with coming up with new concepts. And so as part of that, I said, okay, I will do the 5 books in the Beyond the Frontier sequel series. But simultaneous with that, I want to do 4 books in a series that came to be called Lost Stars, which is told from the perspective of some of the bad guys in the series. It's hard to describe exactly what's happening without giving away spoilers, but these are people who are revolting against the bad guys. And the storylines in Beyond the Frontier and Lost Stars intertwine. You don't have to read both series, but if you do read them, you're seeing some things going on from both sides. So that was the Lost Stars was a deliberate attempt to ensure I could keep fresh perspectives, fresh events going into the Lost Fleet universe. And then Beyond the Frontier was dealing, as you say, with things that were hinted at or led from the original six-book series. So I finished those, and then there was a demand for more books, but I needed time to think of what. And it occurred to me I could do a prequel series, which is actually set a long time before the Lost Fleet. It's set during the time period when humanity is first flooding into that part of the galaxy. The jump drives have just been invented. All these star systems have become available, and people are racing out there. And the prequel series, which is called Genesis Fleet, deals with the problems that arose and why the Alliance started to be formed and the people who were involved in that. So that was a lot of fun and interesting, because I was able to deal with older technology and also a very different situation, and yet was leading to this newer one. And then there's also, I just finished the third book in the follow-on trilogy, which is called Lost Fleet Outlands, and those Boundless, Resolute, and Implacable. And Implacable just came out. And that's Outlands follows directly after Beyond the Frontier. So that's where we are at this point. And already, as soon as people finish Implacable, they're saying, so when's the next one? I don't know how long it will take me to come up with a good story for that, because I think it is my responsibility to repeat myself with situations, keep the characters growing in different ways, new challenges. And that becomes harder when you're 18, 20 books into a series. So I love the characters very much, and I love this the setting and everything, but coming up with those new ideas takes a little longer. So hopefully I'll be able to come up with something, but I'm not sure at this point what will follow after Outlands.
Wow, that's incredible. And suggestions on people starting your series, should they start with the Lost Fleet? Could they do the prequel series and be off fine? How would you say that?
They can start with the prequel series, or they can start with Dauntless, the first of the Lost Fleet. That would work. I write every book so that if someone happens to pick up that book first, they can understand what's going on and who these people are, and you know, get up to speed enough to understand what's going on. But ideally, yes, I would start with either Dauntless or with the prequel series. The first of those was Vanguard. So you could go either way.
Great. Are there any other series or ideas for other series and new universes that you had to write, if you're permitted to discuss that with us?
Well, there's the old ones. I wrote two series before Lost Fleet. One of them was called the Stark's War series. That was my Angry series, which I wrote right after I retired. And my final tour of duty was in the Pentagon. And I saw a lot of things that made me upset. So that's my Angry series. Then I wrote a four-book series that's often called JAG in Space, which is a military science fiction legal thriller series, possibly the only military science fiction legal thriller series, which was interesting. I also have a science fantasy series. It's called Steampunk with Dragon, called The Pillars of Reality, which is it's kind of a labor of love for me. I really enjoyed it. And coming out starting next year, I've written a two-book series. Only two books. That's called The Doomed Earth, which is kind of it's a totally different setting, but it's my attempt to take a classic work as if it was being written today, and see if I could bring it into the 21st century in a way that's feels fresh and yet also familiar. And so the first of those books, In Our Stars, will come out in May of next year. So I'm looking forward to that. Quite a bit of things, yes.
That's awesome. You have a lot of novels up in the air and a lot of ideas spinning around. Could you talk a little bit about your writing process? Are you more of a plotter or your pantser? Do you have like the plot written out before you even start, or do you let the inspiration flow on the page as you're going?
I'm more a pantser than anything else. What I do want to know when I start writing is where I'm starting. And I want to have at least a general sense of where it's going, where this story is going to end. In between those points, I take my characters and I let them see how they're going to find their way from that beginning to that end. And they will go in different ways. One of the problems with characters is sometimes they'll charge off in directions you totally didn't anticipate. And if you don't know where you want the story to go, that can end up sending you down blind alleys. But if you know where you're supposed to be, you can keep them on that track. They're still going to do things you don't expect. They're going to surprise you, which I think is cool. That's, wow, I didn't know this was going to happen. But I think that's a great part of having the characters live in your head, that they actually seem like real people who are responding to events in ways they would do it, rather than, well, we're doing this because the plot requires us to do it. So I try to make it feel very natural in that respect. So primarily, I guess you could say I'm a pantser, because aside from knowing where I'm beginning and where I'm ending, I let things work their way out between those points.
Awesome. Most authors I interview, they're more plot focus oriented, where they have everything written down beforehand. It's interesting to talk to someone who's more of a pantser. It's different from most authors I've spoken to. So that's a lot of fun. Just a few more questions here. I was wondering, I don't speak to many science fiction authors on my podcast. Could you give your kind of starting point for anyone new coming into science fiction? What are the series, or what are like the books that you would suggest they start off with to kind of like get their feet wet? Especially someone like me, who comes like from the fantasy genre more often.
Wow, that's always been a difficult question, and today with so many books out there, it's even more complex. It really depends on what kind of science fiction you like. Do you like the hard SF, which is really, you know, it's got the equipment does this. Or the really soft stuff, more like Star Wars, where, oh, we're in trouble. The Force will save us.
Yeah, I like the stuff more like Dune.
Like Dune? Well, let's see. These are old-fashioned, but some of my favorite are still Andre Norton's works. They're very accessible. And she pioneered a lot of concepts. I really like an old series called... by James Schmidt. There's stories about a girl named Telsey Amberdon who had psychic powers. And these things were written in the 1960s, but they work today. Telsey is a character who could easily be used today. So it's a very good series, imaginative series with a good protagonist. And it lets you get into a type of science fiction that's not focused on equipment, but on people and how they handle situations. I keep coming with these old ones, and that's not fair, because there's a lot of new writers who are very good. Writers like, if you're into a softer kind of science fiction, there's Dragon Riders of Pern and McCaffrey's books, which are mostly scientific, mostly SF, even though there's a fantasy feel to them. Elizabeth Moon has written a lot of good things. Let's see. Bill Dietz, William Dietz, has written a fair number of books that are mostly military science fiction in orientation. And again, it depends whether you're somebody who wants the military environment or pure space opera. let's see. I'm thinking of old people again, and I need to think of more new ones because there's so many out there. As I said, I was impressed by Michael Meme. He's military science fiction tends to go in cycles based on the veterans' experiences. So you had the people who came out of World War I and they wrote a certain type of story, which tended to be apocalyptic because of World War II. And then you had the veterans of Korea and the Cold War. who wrote a certain kind of story that was a little more measured. Then you had the Vietnam veterans, people like Joe Haldeman, who writes very good stuff, which is very much more dark and cynical. Then you have the in-between Cold War people like me. And then you have latest generation people who cut their teeth in Afghanistan and Iraq. And unfortunately, their stuff is a lot like the Vietnam veteran stuff, cynical and dark. So you've got like Michael Mamet and Planet Side, where you've got somebody put into a situation where, apparently hopeless situation. He finds a way out, but it's going to exact a heavy price. So I definitely stick with him. Those are the only names that come to mind. There are so many great ones. Poole Anderson wrote some brilliant science fiction. But it's funny, I keep coming back to people like Andre Norton, who not only wrote, and Robert Heinlein, who wrote stories that were for the most part accessible. Now, in Heinlein's case, I picked the stuff, his middle period, not the later stuff, when he started to, I guess you could say, lose discipline. The books that are something you can pick up and read, and they're just fun. They make you think, but they're also fun, and you care about the protagonist, which I think is very important factor, most important factor, whether you're doing the characters properly. So, and speaking of Andrea Norton, Witch World was kind of a pioneering work by hers, a series of books, which was science fiction with fantasy combined. And I think she was one of the first to do it in that form, somebody traveling to another world. It's what the Japanese would call an isekai, if it was an anime series. And so that's good. And of course, animes are great. They've got some really good science fiction. They've got some really strange stuff, but they've also got some really good ones.
Great. Thank you so much for that list. And I've read Michael Mamet's, I believe it was Misfit Soldier. That was a very fun read to have. So all those suggestions, I'm definitely going to write them down. And just one more question before we let you go. With your immense success with upwards of 20 novels being published traditionally, what bit of advice would you give to any new science fiction or any type of writer coming into the field and trying to land a traditional publishing job? And I know that there's an immense number of self-published authors in the field nowadays. Just if you could share your two cents on that.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the situation has changed quite a bit from when I broke in. And I mean, there's always an element of chaos in it, where we all know really great books that come out and they crater. Nobody buys them. Why? No telling. And then something else comes out and you're like, wow, this isn't very good. And it sells a million copies. So, you just don't know. The things I tell people is you have to read as much as you can so you can see how other people wrote things, how they use their ideas. And then you have to write. You actually have to write. A lot of us, you just want to go through the story in your head over and over again. And what I discovered was once I actually started writing, that I was skipping over the hard parts in my head and just dwelling on the scenes I liked. Doing those in-between parts is hard work, but it's very important. So those are the two biggest things, to keep reading and keep writing, no matter what happens, because there's going to be a lot of rejection, no matter where you are in the field. Maybe somebody like Margaret Atwood doesn't get rejected anymore, but I think everybody else does at one point or another. So you have to be able to deal with rejection and just keep writing, just keep submitting, just keep trying every avenue that's available. Before my novels took off, I wrote a fair number of short stories, short fiction, and I would sell them to any magazine that would take them, because that taught me writing as well, and also gave me room to experiment with ideas. It's a nice thing about short stories. You don't have to invest a huge amount of time in them. You can just experiment with an idea and a concept. and then try to get your name and your face out there, and that'll get hopefully get agents or publishers interested in you. I don't think gimmicks necessarily work in the short term. The what's going to work, if anything does, is a new idea presented in your own way. A lot of people think if they copy something that's popular now, that's the way forward. But whatever the next big thing is going to be, it's not going to be the last big. And publishers don't know that any more than the rest of us. But you have to keep trying, find your own voice, present a new idea. Let me correct that. Not a new idea, but a new way of presenting ideas. Because everything's already been done. Every story has already been told. You have to put together the elements in ways nobody else has. That's the key to it. Like J.K. Rowling with the Harry Potter stories. Was any single element of that original? Probably not. But she put them together in a way that people loved, and she combined that with really good characters. And that's the sort of thing you want to aspire to. To use your find your own voice and take advantage of every opportunity to meet with agents, editors, other writers. There are conventions out there where the writers attend, sometimes agents as well, and sometimes publishers, things like Dragon Con or Balticon, near where I am in Baltimore. And you can actually, writers love to talk to you about that. You can talk to agents, see what sort of thing they're looking for. Maybe you can even get a chance to talk to a publisher, an editor from a publisher, and say, you know, what are you looking for? And get your face known to them, your name known to them. So that's a really important thing, I think, to help people along. You don't have to be isolated, interacting only electronically. If you go to one of these conventions, it gives you a chance to more freely interact with people. And, you know, you buy writers a drink and they'll talk to you as long as you want them to. There's competition, but it's also probably the most supportive group I've ever been among, you know, where everybody's willing to help you out with what they know and introduce you to people if they think that can help you. So that's what I would suggest. The way to break through, try to come up with an idea nobody else is mining heavily at the moment and put a different spin on it, and keep trying. Keep trying no matter how many times you get rejected, because only by continuing to write will you get better, and only by continuing to submit will you have a chance of getting accepted.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. Oh, this has been such a great talk. Thank you so much, Sean. Could you tell the audience where they might be able to find you, where they can find your stories, and yeah.
Well, I can be, my website is jack-campbell.com, and I try to keep it up to date. There's also a group on Facebook, Fans of the Lost Fleet, where, you know, interact pretty real time with people on that. My books, you know, found in any available retailer, and then through my agent, Joshua Bilmes at Jabberwocky. So yeah, I encourage anyone who has questions or comments to, they can either go to my website at jackcampbell.com, and there's a link there to send me a message, or go to the Lost Fleet group on Facebook, where everybody talks about lots of different things, not just the Lost Fleet books, but anything else I happen to have written.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John, for joining me. I can't wait to continue and finish the Lost Fleet series, and hopefully we can have you back on to talk more about it.
Okay, thank you. I'd be happy to.
All right, cheers, everybody.